Hi guys, welcome back to Not By Sight, a place where you will always hear inspiring stories of faith and hope that are birthed out of difficult seasons, the valleys of life. Today's episode is called A Feat of Faith, because you're going to meet a warrior who combined an athletic mindset with her faith in God to defeat the biggest opponent of her life. Amber Turnbow is a wife, a mother of three, and a middle school special education teacher in the Atlanta area. I met Amber during French class in our senior year of high school, and we became best friends. We had no idea how our paths would reconverge later in life through a shared health crisis. 13 years ago, when Amber's two oldest children were only 3 and 4 years old, she received a phone call that would upend the life that she knew. What she did with the worst news of her life blew me away. Let's take a listen. Amber, thank you so much for coming on Not By Sight. I'm so, so thankful that you agreed to just be on tonight.
I am so excited to be here with you and to have this opportunity.
I feel like you're one of those people that basically, to me, you're like the epitome of resilience, somebody who has been through difficult things and has not let them define you per se, and has used hard stuff to become a stronger person. You and I have something in common. We're both breast cancer survivors. How did you end up finding out that I have cancer?
I was just sitting on the couch watching TV, and I was just running my hand across my chest for some reason. And at 12 o'clock on my chest, I felt a lump. And I have no family history of breast cancer or any type of cancer. So I thought, well, that's just weird. You know, and everybody said, oh, I'm sure it's just, you know, a cyst or whatever. And so I had my mother-in-law went with me and we got an ultrasound done. And then the ultrasound people were like, eh, don't really like this. You need a biopsy. And then everybody was still like, there's no way. You're so young. No way. And when I was in my classroom teaching, and I called my nurse to set up an appointment to come in and get my results. And when I called her, I could tell from her voice that she already knew I had it. And bless his heart, I had a student looking through the little window of my classroom at the time, because like it was time for the students to come in. I was just trying to finish up this call real quick. And I heard her voice and I said, it's cancer, isn't it? And she was just like, yes. And I just broke down, just bawling, crying. And this poor little boy is looking through my classroom window, horrified. Yeah. His eyes were so big. He's like, what's wrong with my teacher? And so my sister came and picked me up from school, and we drove straight to the doctor's office, and my mom and my husband and my mother-in-law and my father-in-law, we all packed into this tiny little room and got the news. And it was very surreal, definitely a surreal moment in time. And I remember like in slow motion looking at everyone's face in the room, and I could tell that they believed I was going to die. And I, with every fiber of my being, I knew I wasn't going to.
What do you think it was that was in you telling you this is not going to be the end of your life? What do you attribute that to?
It was definitely my faith. It was definitely his voice. I mean, there's no other explanation for why someone would feel that confident in a moment in time like that.
Wow.
And it was him speaking that over me. And it was my absolute resolution to continue to be the mother of my children.
Yes.
Like that was like, yeah, there was nothing that was going to stop me from being here to parent my children. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you feel like in that moment though, that you still kind of had to walk believing in, okay, I'm going to get through this, but I'm also believing in something that I can't see. Did you still feel that as you like even when you were sitting in the room hearing your diagnosis?
Yes. Yes.
So you were walking by faith, not by sight.
I had to. Yeah. Yes. That's what gets me through even current hard times, mm-hmm. is this, yes, there's a voice in my head that's like, this sucks. This is horrible. I wish this wasn't happening. And then there's his voice in my head just letting me know, like, this is on purpose. You're gonna make it. It's okay. I'm here with you. And eventually this is going to turn into something, you know, positive in your life eventually. And I really hesitate to explain that to people. I don't say that to many people because I feel like a lot of people, when they're going through hard times, that's a very irritating thing to hear. But it's truth. I mean, I believe it with, you know, it's been my experience in every difficult time I've ever been through.
Was your faith always kind of something that was front and center, or did you feel like it increased from a moment like this?
That's a good question. My faith in my life has been something that has wavered a lot. As you said, I've been through a lot of difficult times, and there have been multiple times in my life where my faith has waned, and I've questioned his presence in my life. I've questioned whether he truly cares about me, whether he truly loves me. And if so, how could those moments in time have happened? Yeah. But given time, and sometimes it's a short amount of time and sometimes it's a long amount of time, but always given time, it's become so apparent to me that he was with me the entire time. And that's really hard sometimes to understand when there's so much pain involved, but that's always in the end been my truth. It's always been what has become apparent to me. And the reason that it's become apparent to me is because I've seen the miracles that he works in me and how I am able to turn around and use those to help others. And in those moments where I'm helping others in a multitude of ways, I am fully aware that I would not be capable of doing the good that I'm doing without having been through what I've been through. And that to me just increases my confidence that he was there all along, even in those really difficult times.
When you came out of surgery, I remember you telling me that your family was kind of horrified. Tell me what your family had learned when you had come out.
The doctor came out, after the surgery was over while I was still recovering, and told my family that my tumor was actually 8 centimeters instead of the 3 that they thought, and that I had 14 lymph node involvements. So they had to remove most of my lymph nodes, and that those numbers, the number of lymph nodes plus the size of the tumor, put me at stage 4, and I had a 30% chance of living.
Wow.
They said that the tumor had been there probably anywhere from 4 to 6 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
So when you found that news out after you're coming out of surgery, did that change your mindset or cause you to go, whoa, whoa, maybe I have this wrong. Maybe this isn't going to turn out how I thought it was.
No. If anything, it made me dig my heels down deeper. I just said, okay, well, I hear you, but it just sounded like a number to me. It didn't feel like the end. It just sounded like a number, and it just let me know, okay, you know, I'm going to have to, you know, this surgery isn't going to be the end. You know, there's a lot more that I'm going to have to do. And, but still at no time was death, on the table for me.
Wow. How do you feel like, you know, during the hardest times of the whole cancer experience, how do you feel like God really met you and spoke to you and like ministered to you in those really difficult parts of your experience?
Honestly, I don't feel like the ministering by him was happening that I was aware of during the time. It honestly came afterwards. All processing of everything that had just happened came when everything was over. I believe that during the time, I wasn't processing emotionally or even spiritually anything. I was just, I was in the battle, and it was all physical. And I mean, but at the same time, the fact that my mind stayed so strong, he obviously was, but my conversations with him that I can recall did not start until after the battle was over. And that's when a lot of the work started to, with my relationship with him, happened.
That makes sense. So, well, yeah, I mean, just kind of even thinking about the approach that I also feel like you are probably taking to this battle with cancer, you're an athlete. You know, I know True. That you played volleyball for so many years. I know that you've coached your daughter's team. And you, do you feel like you approach this from almost like an athletic mindset as well of like, I know what I have to do.
Yep.
We're going to get this done and that's it.
Yep. Definitely. I even attribute the things that the great coaches in my life had taught me, that played a part into how I approached my battle. It was definitely like, that's why I said when I found out about the 30%, it just meant I had to dig my heels in deeper. You know, that just meant, okay, you know, this is going to require more endurance, you know, than I thought. And I know how to do that. I know how to keep going even when I don't think I can anymore, which is something I learned from sports. You know, physically you think I cannot put one more foot in front of the other, but mentally somehow you do it. And that was definitely a part of that, how I handled that. Yeah.
Having two young children, you know, you're 31 years old. What kinds of thoughts were you dealing with on a daily basis as you were going through treatment? Even though you believed you were going to get through it, but like, what was it like walking through those days?
My family and friends and coworkers rallied around my family, my children, and myself. And I was so fortunate that my mom, she bought a house like a mile from my house, and that's where, and she took complete care of me. And my husband really stepped up to the plate with the kids, and then the family and friends rallied around him and the kids and made sure they had everything they needed, from house cleaning to meals. And then he handled the nurturing part, you know, to his, you know, what he considers nurturing. It may not be the same as me, but they were receiving love
right.
and attention. I was really able to focus on myself. The only time that I thought about my children was honestly when I was around them. Mm-hmm. And that was very, it was so weird because it was extremely difficult because I couldn't do, I honestly, all I could do was just sit and watch them. I couldn't get on the ground and play with them. I couldn't, I didn't have the energy. And also I was just so fragile from all the surgeries.
Right.
And then when I was going through radiation, I couldn't hold them. And
wow.
I would just sit in a chair and watch them. And I would find myself feeling sorry for myself in those moments. But then I would have the thought, again, it's his words saying, you're here.
Mm.
Like, you're here. That's the gift.
Right.
Like, you're in the same room with them. You're hearing their voices. They can look in your eyes. Like, that's enough.
Right.
Like, what you're doing right now, just sitting in a chair, is enough. And those were the kind of words that he would speak into me that helped me get through those moments of not being able to be the mother that I always thought I would be. I definitely never thought I would be a mom that was just sitting there.
Did you go through anger? Did you feel angry? I mean, you mentioned feeling kind of sorry for yourself, but yeah.
Oh gosh. I would like, when everything was over and I started to allow myself to feel emotions and start to process things, like I would be standing in line at the store and the woman in front of me would have the most beautiful hair and I would be so mad at her because I was so bald. Mm-hmm. And then like, when I would get mad at people who I would see smoking, I would get mad at people who I saw eating fast food, because I was vegan for 7 years and before I got sick, and I was a yoga instructor and I was an athlete and I had no family history. It's like I had done everything by the book and I still just, you know, I was so sick, and I would see all these people making, you know, different, you know, unhealthy lifestyle choices.
Right.
And they're just like chilling, you know, they're just like, woohoo, everything's fine. And I'm just like, really? And so I definitely went through a phase where I was jealous of others and I was angry and I was depressed. Mm-hmm. And I remember my nurse wanted to put me on antidepressants. And I told her, I said, it is normal that I am depressed about this. Mm-hmm. There's a lot for me to be depressed about that just happened.
Right.
And I told her, I said, if I get to a point where I feel like I'm never going to come out of it, I'll let you know. But I think this is a normal response to everything that I've just been through.
You mentioned that, you know, you felt like it wasn't until after you went through cancer that you were able to really see God or know kind of how he ministered to you through that. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I had already been through some challenges in my childhood that had caused me to really question his presence in my life. And I'd already gone through the process of saying, wait, you know, I don't think you're here for me. You know, I don't think that you love me. And you know, I don't know if you actually exist. And I had already gone through in about my early 20s, I had gone through a process of really asking a lot of those questions. And in the end, I came to see, as I had said earlier, that yes, in fact, he was there the whole time. Yes, he was right by my side. And at many times he was carrying me at times when I felt extremely alone and forsaken and forgotten. And so I feel like cancer was just more of a confirmation of what because the things that I had experienced as a child were extreme in their levels of difficulty. And, you know, I feel like I had already been through really tough times where I had learned of his love for me and his presence in my life. And so this was just another confirmation. I mean, yes, I did go through the emotions again after cancer, feeling forsaken, feeling forgotten, feeling furious and angry. How could you let this happen to me? Why did you let this happen to me? How could you let this happen to me? And then once again, just as before, I came through the other side, recognizing that this is part of my journey. It's not something that he's causing. It's something that is just part of my journey and part of my experience. And he has equipped me through even the difficult things I went through as a child helped prepare me for what I went through with cancer. It's all connected. It's all linked. And it's all something that only he can really understand and know.
Wow. I mean, I love that you're able to see how, you know, it was a part of your journey, but like we said at the start of this interview, that you are choosing to use the hard stuff for good. Tell me a little bit about how you feel like you've seen some redemption in your story, like how you've been able to see like good things come out of such a difficult season with cancer.
Mm-hmm. Well, gosh, sometimes I wonder if I would even still be married if I hadn't gone through cancer. Sometimes I think I wouldn't be nearly as good of a parent if I hadn't gone through cancer. I learned so much about listening to myself and taking care of myself. And I feel like often when things fall apart in our lives, it's because maybe we're not really present with ourselves and we're not really aware of what's happening because we get so disconnected with ourselves. And through cancer, I learned I have to take care of myself. I have to pay attention to how I'm feeling and what's happening and my own well-being if I want to be able to take care of others, if I want to be able to be a good wife, if I want to be able to be a good mother. Whereas prior to cancer, it was just, oh, in order to be a good mom and a good wife, I just give everything to those people. It doesn't even matter if I'm tired. It doesn't matter how I'm feeling. I'm just giving everything to them. And I thought that that's what made me a good mom and a good wife. And I mean, it was a lot of transition for my husband and I, because I definitely came out the other side a different person. And, but it's that change and that transition that I went through, it makes us stronger as a couple. I know for a fact that I'm a much better role model for my daughter. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's 16 and she is just, I mean, she is so brave and there is nothing that you can put in front of her that she's intimidated by. Mm-hmm. She will take on any challenge. Mm-hmm. And that's an amazing confidence to have mm-hmm. at such a young age.
Yes.
And I'm so thankful that she gets to go out into the world when she does, you know, on her own and have that. And I know that she wouldn't have that, you know, if she hadn't witnessed my faith. Mm-hmm. And she even wrote a poem about it. about witnessing my faith and witnessing my strength that I could only have from him. That the kind of strength that I had to go through that could not come from a human. Like, it was definitely, like, in my opinion, what I call, like, you know, superhuman, you know, strength and determination. And yeah, she won like third place in the state of Georgia for the poem. Oh, I mean, it was,
what a gift, you know, what a gift that was for your mother heart too, you know, like what,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, what a blessing.
Yeah.
You know, you alluded to the fact that you came out of cancer a different person. How do you feel like it changed you as a person from like Amber before cancer to Amber after?
Number one, I definitely had set it up in my mind that by doing A, B, and C, then I'm guaranteed these results. I thought that there was a formula to happiness and a formula to being strong and a formula to being a good wife and a formula to being a good mom. And, you know, when you go through something like that, you realize there are no formulas. And you can't predetermine it. I thought that if I had control over myself, if I did these things, then everything would turn out a certain way. And that's just not the case. And that's not having faith. That's not, you know, that's trying to go by sight. You know, what you and I are talking about is not by sight, but I was living my life thinking that as long as I made everything look a certain way, as long as I acted a certain way, then it would yield these results.
Yes.
And that's not, that's the number one difference between me then and now, is that I'm very aware of that.
How do you feel like the cancer experience also changed how you see the world? Like for me, for instance, I feel like nature to me is more illuminated. Like after going through breast cancer, I was so aware of, like now I'm so aware of the birds and the flowers and the sunsets and the sunrises. And like, I feel like nature has been heightened for me in a way, like almost like a veil has been lifted of like, do you see the beauty all around you? And I feel like I'm able to fully experience God's creation in a way that I have never experienced before. And it wasn't like that before cancer. It like, are there certain things that kind of jump out at you that you feel like, wow, I experience good things even better now?
I do. And I would say primarily it's that happens for me in my profession, in teaching. In fact, especially the last 2 years, I truly believe that I am here as one of his soldiers. I'm here to do his work. And I've always prayed, when I do pray, one of the prayers I say for myself is, whatever you need me to do here on earth, you know, bring those opportunities to me. Show me what it is that you need from me.
Yes.
And sometimes I regret that, like, something will present itself and I'll be called to do something. I'm like, oh man, I don't know. That's a little much, but it always ends up being right, of course. And so 2 years ago, I was called into the office. Like I was literally in class teaching. I was called into the office at my school and I was told, this is what we need you to do. You need to go into this self-contained, moderately intellectually disabled and visually impaired classroom, and you're becoming their teacher, and it's December. It's the middle of the school year.
Wow.
And you need to completely flip the classroom. It's a complete wreck. Everything's a mess. The parents are unhappy. The kids haven't been learning anything. Go fix it.
Wow.
And I'm like, excuse me? And you have 3 days like to flip the classroom and then you're teaching. And I was like, well, okay. So,
wow.
But teaching these students the last 2 years, the amount of sympathy and not sympathy, that's the wrong word. Empathy.
Yeah.
The amount of empathy that I have for them, it's very healing for them. It's very healing for me. And I could only have that having gone what I've been through. A lot of them have medical conditions. You know, several of them are blind, and working with them requires an incredible amount of patience. And it also requires, a lot of understanding, about medical conditions and I feel like a lot of teachers, I don't think they mean to, but from what I've seen, like a lot of teachers, they sometimes feel like the kids are making excuses, like, and I feel like because of the cancer, because of going through cancer, I see them and I see them suffering or struggling mm-hmm. physically or due to a medical condition. And I'm a lot more understanding and compassionate. And I feel like that's very healing for them. And I honestly, based off of things that they say and that their parents say, I don't think that's very common. Right. We would think that adults working with this population of children would be that way. But unfortunately, even people with good intentions, sometimes the day in and day out of working with that population of students can get, you know, it can get very tiring. And I think that, and I know for a fact that the work that I have been doing with them mm-hmm. has positively changed their life. I know that they will remember me forever. Mm. I know their parents will remember me forever. And I do not take the credit for that. That's all his work. And he has me in their own purpose. And I could never have that positive impact on their lives had I not been through something like cancer.
Wow. That's powerful. Definitely. That's powerful. Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. I just love that you just that, you know, the way you talk to God, like I am a soldier, like I am a soldier. I want you to bring me opportunities. I want to do your work here on this earth. Like that is just, yeah. I think that's amazing. And that's a way to be used by God to also bring God glory and, to fulfill the purposes that he has for you. And just the fact that he's obviously placed you where he has you to do the things that you're doing. And you're affecting lives, you know, and mm-hmm. that is, I mean, there's nothing more powerful than that, really.
Yeah.
You know, even thinking about your, you know, time with your children now, I mean, your kids were 3 and 4. So, you know, even going back, we're just talking about your two older kids there. After you got through the cancer, we need to hear about what happened after that because another baby came. So tell me what happened.
Wow. Yeah. So I was told prior to my cancer treatments that if I ever wanted to have another child, I needed to freeze my eggs, that the chemotherapy, the year-long chemotherapy and the radiation that I was going to go through were going to make it so I could no longer, you know, have the ability to have a child, and that it was going to send me into menopause, et cetera. And I said, well, I'm good. I have my boy. I have my girl. We're good. And so after my treatments were done, so again, about a year and a half after it all began, I had not had my menstrual cycle. I had already started to have hot flashes for months. And my husband and I just, you know, we just weren't, you know, we just didn't think we were able to have any more children. Mm-hmm. And I started having some issues with some things. And I was going to the gynecologist and they were putting me on some medications and such. And those medications weren't really working or helping. And so I went back, and while I was there, they were like, "You're pregnant." And I said, "No, I'm not. Like, mm-hmm. you've got the wrong test. Like, mm-hmm. you looked at the wrong sample or something. Like, there's just no way. I'm not even able to." And they're like, "Yeah, you are." Well, the problem was, actually, this was before I was done with my treatments. I still had 3 treatments left.
Wow.
When I got pregnant the first time. And so my oncologist at the time said, "Amber, this has never happened before
wow.
in the history of anyone being on this medication, that while they're on this drug that is specific for her to the type of cancer that I had, that they've gotten pregnant. We don't even have any statistics to show what this has done to the fetus or will do. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to choose to stay, you know, to keep your baby, then you are going to have to discontinue your infusions." Mm-hmm. Well, that wasn't an option. So we did have to have a medically necessitated abortion, which my husband and I did not agree with. Mm-hmm. We don't agree with abortion, but we also did not agree that it was right for me to discontinue my chemo and be alive for the 2 children we had already brought into the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
We felt that we owed them my life. Like they were already here, mm-hmm. you know, brought into the physical world, and that I needed to be here for them. Mm-hmm. So my husband and I did so much prayer, so much prayer to that fetus. We prayed and prayed and prayed, hands on my belly. Please come back when my body is healthy and able to carry you. That was our prayer. And I mean, we cried, we kept the picture, of the fetus. It broke our hearts. Mm-hmm. And so I had that procedure done. And then literally the day I was done with, maybe the week after I was done with everything, I was done with all my treatments, everything. And mind you, I wasn't even supposed to be able to get pregnant that first time. Mm-hmm. I went in for my regular blood work because at this time I was going in like once a month. Mm-hmm. And I will always remember I was vacuuming in the den and I felt fine. I wasn't having any symptoms of anything, but I was vacuuming and the phone rang and it was my doctor's office. And the nurse was like, Amber, there was a problem with your blood work. And I was like, oh my gosh, the cancer's back, immediately, of course. Mm-hmm. And she said, you're pregnant.
Wow.
I said, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. Are you kidding me? I mean, a week after my treatments were done. Wow. And that's Jonathan. That's our 10-year-old son.
Wow.
And we know that his personality from day one, we call him the bulldozer. There is no barrier that he mm-hmm. cannot break through. Mm-hmm. And we know that that was his spirit. That was him the first time. And he heard us and he said, okay, I'll come back. And that's what he did.
So amazing. So amazing. So after you went through breast cancer, it wasn't just like, okay, Amber had cancer and then the rest of her life is hunky dory and everything right. is totally perfect with her health.
Well, I would say the first health challenge that I went through was mental health. And I don't feel like enough attention is put on the mental health post treatment and especially post surgeries. Mm. You know, we live in a society where, you know, a woman's physical body, there's a lot of emphasis put on it. And even though I'm not a person who put a lot of physical, a lot of emphasis on my physical, like how I looked or anything prior to cancer, something like going through all of those surgeries and treatments, it changes your physical being a lot. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those images that we see in the mirror or, that we see on ourselves is connected to how much of whether we feel like a woman or not.
Right,
and there's just not enough conversation about that. There's a ton of support and help and conversations about, when you're diagnosed and when you're going through treatments mm-hmm. and how to handle this surgery or, decisions to make about that. But like, it's like, what about the after? I feel like that's where the work really starts. I feel like that's where the emotional work starts. That's where the spiritual work starts. And it's definitely where the mental work starts.
Did you come up against any other health challenges after you went through breast cancer?
I do believe that all of the chemotherapy that I went through, I do believe it's the cause of my current autoimmune disease. About 2 years ago, I started to get numbness in my feet, which spread all the way up to my legs, which spread up to my abdomen, which eventually spread up to my, up to my abdomen. And my mom insisted I go to the emergency room once it had gotten to right below my breast. Mm-hmm. And, in the emergency room, I passed all the tests for like they did the vision test, walking. I was doing everything great, but they're like, fine. We're just going to go ahead and just, do this MRI just in case. And during the MRI, they found that I had lesions on my T3, T4, and T5 vertebrae, which are right behind my breast, which is the area that was heavily radiated. And, when you go into radiation, I mean, literally there are skulls, all over the wall, people are in hazmat suits to come in just to set you up and leave. I mean, obviously it's some bad stuff, and we don't know to the full extent of what it does, but, right behind my breast, those three vertebrae had lesions on them that were destroying my myelin sheath, which, then was affecting my central nervous system, which is what was causing the numbness. And, to this day, I might have difficulty with memory. If I get a cold, the numbness will come back. It's affected my life dramatically. For about 6 months, I didn't think I was ever going to feel normal again. Mm-hmm. And it's just a, it's once again, like you said, it's just a new normal, you know, it's just different. Is this how I saw myself, you know, when I was, you know, in my teens and 20s and I was just, you know, had tons of energy and I could do anything? No. Can I get out there and play soccer with my kids? No. I can't even if I do coach now, I have to be very, very careful. And a lot of times I won't even do the actual handling of the ball. I'll just kind of be on the side directing. And because of if I do too much, then I could possibly be in bed for a couple of days due to low energy. And so it's almost like I'm given a certain amount of energy each day, and I have to be mindful of where what my outputs are.
Right.
Because if I deplete my resources, then it'll get to where I can't even get out of bed to go to the bathroom for like 2 days. It's a struggle. Mm. So, and that's very different for me because I've always been mind over body,
right.
But this autoimmune disease is not one where that's an option. When I go down, that's it. Mm. There's no talking myself out of it. And, so that's just been another part of my journey, you know, I'm still working on that one. Right. I wouldn't say that I necessarily have full understanding of the part this is playing in my life.
Right.
I'm still figuring that out.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. To me, it sounds a little bit still like there is almost some valley like feel to it, you know, cause you're still kind of walking in this like faith of like, you know, not letting this autoimmune thing, you know, define your life or have control over your life, but you're also having to like trust God to help you every step of the way.
Yes.
What would you say to someone who is, you know, going through really difficult season, you know, if they're going through a difficult season or if they've just gotten a medical diagnosis or if they're living with an autoimmune thing, you know, kind of like yourself, what kind of encouragement or advice would you give to somebody who finds themselves in kind of a valley of not knowing what's ahead and just kind of having to trust and believe?
If you're in a valley, I feel like it's important to value that moment in time, give it credit, allow it to be there. I feel like a lot of times we try to run or hide from the truth. And I feel like sometimes we need to sit in the truth with him, trust that he's there with us, acknowledge that that moment does suck. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Mm-hmm. I acknowledge the emotion that comes with it. I am angry. My daughter just reminded me of that the other day. She's like, Mom, it's okay for me to be angry. I don't have to be happy all the time. And I was like, thank you for that reminder. Right. You're right. You have a reason to be angry,
right.
And yeah, be mad, you know, but sometimes, you know, we worry about the people that we love or we worry about ourselves and oh gosh, if I'm not happy all the time, then something's wrong with me. No, sometimes in life, there are moments that truly are not great, but that doesn't mean they never will be great. And I feel like acknowledging the moment, but also knowing and trusting with every fiber of your being that it will be okay. At some point, we don't know when that's going to be, and we don't know what that okay is going to look like. That okay might look different afterwards than it did before the valley, you know, before you went into the valley. And just really trying to have an open mind and an open heart, and it requires an incredible amount of trust in him and trust in yourself.
Such good advice, and just hearing your perspective. I'm so thankful that God brought you into my life back in 1993.
Yes.
And here we are in the year 2020. And the fact that we can still know each other and encourage each other and share our stories, because I really believe, and that's also why I'm doing this podcast, I really believe that in sharing our stories, it also heals us. It allows us to experience healing. It allows us to speak truth and the truth that we have learned from life, and it allows us to encourage others. And I just, you know, I really hope that people listen to this, really fully through that people listen to your story, because you just have so many like pearls of wisdom to share, and you have come from a place where you have earned the right to share what you have shared. And so I just love you so much. And I am so grateful for your friendship and who you are and how you're using your voice in such a positive, empowering way.
Well, at first, I just want to say thank you for choosing to use your gifts and talents and time and energy to do things that are empowering to women, that are spreading wisdom, that are encouraging other people to understand that times are not always easy, mm-hmm. but there is still good on the other side. There is. Yeah, it can go either direction. And we have to understand that we do have a choice in the direction that these things take in our lives. We do. We do not have control over what happens to us to some degree, but we do have control over how it changes us.
So true. We have a choice in how we respond to what happens to us. She's right. I'd love to hear your thoughts on today's episode. Reach out to me at notbysightpodcast@gmail.com. And also be sure to subscribe to Not By Sight with Deborah Stewart on iTunes. I'd also love it if you would write a review so that more people can find and connect to this podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Take care.